Blog Talk Radio.
Andrew, if there's one thing that you and I have talked about that AEW needs, we've said it over and over again, it's more titles. We've been on this soapbox for months now. There's not enough titles. There's not enough belts. So they need more. And finally, now we've got two world titles. So problem solved, right? Another title to worry about. Things are fantastic.
Yeah, I got so worked up once I nearly quit the show because there were not enough titles in AEW. And you talked me into staying, and it looks like that finally paid off because we now have our 75th title to fight over.
Yeah, I mean, pretty soon every match is going to be a title match, I think.
I'm kind of disappointed that it isn't, and I'm also disappointed that every single wrestler under contract doesn't have a title.
That might be part of the pitch. Come here and you're guaranteed a title because we have more titles on the show than we have wrestlers on the show, potentially.
It's headed that way. Yeah.
Obviously, for those that did not watch Collision, we are referring to the fact that apparently CM Punk's title is a title now, I guess. Nobody really knows. I guess it's a title in the sense that he's defending it next week. So I guess it's a title, even though the other world champion was actually on the show and didn't really seem to be bothered by the fact that this guy was claiming that he was a real world champion because, oh, the actual world champion is too busy in his tag team feud, which has come across well. Again, last week I said I liked it, and I liked some of the stuff they were doing, and I thought that the tag match on Saturday night was great. But it would have been nice if MJF, like, at least alluded to the fact that he heard what Punk said, because now we have a world champion who doesn't care that there's someone else claiming to be the real world champion. And the guy who's claiming to be the real world champion but isn't actually the world champion is going to defend his belt that isn't actually a real belt on next week's show. Did I get it? That pretty much sum it up?
That, yeah, I think you did. That's a really good point. I didn't even think of that, like, while watching the show, that MJF should have at least, like, grabbed the mic for 5 seconds and been like, hey, like, this is the real title right here, Punk. You know, you don't have to do, like, anything overly major because he's got, you know, a lot of storylines going on. But it felt kind of rushed, I guess, in that sense. I guess they want to pay that off eventually, but I don't know why it needs to be for this Ricky Starks feud, and I don't know why Punk has to do it right now unless they're setting this up for perhaps All In. And the other, like, I guess, I don't know if it's a quibble, but I just thought it was kind of funny that this whole time it was like, Punk was like, what's in the bag? What's in the bag? When the very first night he came out, he basically said the title's in this bag. So it was no big surprise, I guess.
I guess not. Here's the other thing that no one seems to be talking about, which drove me nuts on Saturday, late Saturday night. Actually, Sunday, excuse me. It was Sunday night when I watched Collision. But there was... the title was included in the little angle that happened after the tag match with Cole and MJF. And like you said, it wasn't brought up. You know, Cole was basically like, yeah, you're still the world champion. He tries to give him the belt. We thought that MJF was going to turn on him. He didn't. But the world title was a central part of that show closing angle. And like you said, not even off mic did MJF say something about like, no, Punk, I'm still the real. It's almost as if they don't want those two to interact. It came across, and I don't know if this is the plan, but it came across as if there's going to be two world titles, one on each show. That's how it came across.
So the way I read it, and I could be wrong, maybe that's where they are headed. I was thinking maybe they pulled an audible on Cole MJF. Like, that was the original plan for All In or All Out. I forget which one. Whatever.
Yeah.
But they're like, you know, Tony's like, this is too popular. Like, we can't pull the trigger on have them turn on each other. We're going to run with this longer. So maybe let's do Punk, MJF, but right, we got to introduce that title to like make that work. So that was my guess, but I guess we will probably find out on tomorrow's, no, I'm sorry, it's Monday today, Wednesday show where they're headed with this. I hope so, at least. I hope they get around to booking a match.
Jeez, I hope so too, because, you know, it's the reason why I say it struck me is, when I watched it, my interpretation was they're going to go with two world titles, one on each show, is again because MJF didn't seem to care.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an odd way to go about that because it's such like a big thing to bring out a title. Like, that should have been the talking point of the show. Like, the announcer should have been talking about it. Other wrestlers should have been saying it. There should have been, like, you know, chaos over basically the former champ who was never pinned, you know, saying that he still has the title. Like, it should have been a really big moment, but instead it was to set up a match for next week with Ricky Steamboat, which is cool, I guess, but it's
cool.
It's very random.
It is very random, but it's cool.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I want to ask you is, and which I think is a legitimate question, why is CM Punk the only one talking about Wembley?
Oh, man.
The show that is now less than a month away, and with the exception of a banner hanging up in the building, up in the corner, up in the ceiling, and I think the announcer's mentioning it in passing a couple of times, CM Punk is the first person to even mention the fact that the show exists, and it's in less than a month.
This is, like, one of the most baffling things Tony Khan, I think, has ever done. He's done a lot of baffling things, but... I mean, this is basic. This has the chance, correct me if I'm wrong, but this has the chance to be the actual biggest wrestling show ever, like,
yes,
with legit tickets sold. Like, yep. I think they're only a few thousand away, and it's less than a month away, and there's not one single match announced. Like, imagine, like, WrestleMania 3 a month out having nothing, like, them not planning Hogan Andre out or anything. It's insane.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It is insane. But I thought that was interesting that Punk brought that up and kind of said, why am I the only one talking about this? Has it even been mentioned before? Because I don't think it has. But
no,
anyway,
I don't think so. Yeah.
Collision was an interesting show in that regard. Also, again, the ladder match, it was good. I think we said last week, we're sure it will be good. It struck me as odd that we're having a ladder match over a mask that the guy doesn't actually wear, really. So it can't be that important to him. But
right,
nevertheless, we had one. And the match was good. I think it was an excuse to have a ladder match, but it was fine. This to me kind of struck, kind of encapsulated what my biggest complaints are about AEW for the most part. The matches are excellent. They get that. Like, they're very good at what they do in the ring. Their matches are almost always great.
Mm-hmm.
The storyline path to get there very often feels nonsensical, or sometimes it doesn't even exist. Like, we'll have big matches that have no story behind them at all, but it's just, we're going to have a big match for the sake of having a big match, and there's going to be big moves, and it's going to be great. But, like... this made no sense. They're having a ladder match over a mask that the guy doesn't wear. I get it. He wears it sometimes on ring entrances and stuff like that, but, like, it's not... when anyone thinks of Andrade, was the mask a central part of his character? No, he's not Rey Mysterio. The guy doesn't wear it in the ring.
I was just thinking that as you were saying that. Like, it would mean more if somebody stole Jeff Jarrett's guitar, because identify, even though he could just buy another guitar and he breaks them over people's heads all the time, you identify Jeff Jarrett with a guitar. I think of more of Andrade's, like, striped pants that he used to wear in his last run more than that mask. And yeah, they've never established until like 2 weeks ago that it meant anything to him. And also, Did anyone care about Buddy Matthews versus Andrade? Like, no offense to either of those guys, but, like, that storyline I don't think hooked anyone. So you should probably, like, save those types of matches for when they count. Like, if you wanted to do, like, Ospreay, Kenny Omega, like, round 3 and do that with a ladder match, like, I think people would be super into that. But just to throw it out on Collision, like you're saying, for the sake of doing a ladder match, and it's not even Malakai Black. Like, that would have made more sense, like, the leader of the group, but... it's the mid guy in the group, so yeah.
It's the guy that can do the flipping moves off a ladder.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, like, these matches are good, but you need to have more. And I know people get upset when I say this. You need to have more than just good matches, because you get to the point where a lot of these matches start to feel exactly the same. How many dives can I see in one show?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm seeing 25 dives over the course of 4 matches, guess what? Shit starts to not matter. You know, and all the matches start to look exactly the same, because everyone's doing the same dives through the rope, and everyone's doing the same, you know, suplexes and whatever. All the matches look so similar, and if the stories aren't real tight for them to exist to begin with, and you don't really care about who wins and loses, because what does it matter? It's just a great match, and this is awesome, and that's all people want to do. Like... I don't know. It starts to feel all very much the same. Like, the ladder match was great. It was very exciting. I enjoyed it.
Same.
It also looked like 55 other AEW matches that I've seen.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, there was just no emotional hook onto that. And I mean, I guess they're like trying a little more, it seems in general, just maybe because they have more TV time, but that did not justify that match at this point in time. I think you just save big matches like that, big gimmicks like that for when they count. Because otherwise it feels like TNA back in the day where every single, like early years, every single week they would just have some hardcore match or ladder match or Ultimate X match just for the hell of it. And nobody, and you didn't care about any of the competitors for the most part, but it was just to get that gimmick on the show.
It was get big moves on the show because big moves were going to get people to tune in. And Tony's kind of, I feel like, falling into the same trap to a certain extent, you know. And again, I don't know what the deal is, but I'm sure, just like with the ladder match, I'm sure the London show will be fantastic. However, you know, we'll see what gets booked, but we're a month out now, and it's like, what stories are being told here that are going to emotionally hook me for the matches on that show? They're telling a decent story with Cole and MJF, and there's some multiple layers to it. And the Punk Starks thing, I guess there's something there. The Elite and BCC just had a blow off match, so I mean, are you going towards Omega and Ospreay because you haven't even talked about it yet? There's a story you can tell there, but again, like, we don't even know if that's happening. There doesn't seem to be a lot of storylines that feel like they're coming to a crescendo around the time that the Wembley show is going to happen. It doesn't feel like, and we can sit there and go, well, there's a month's a long time to build it up. Not really. I mean, it's like four dynamites. There's and four collisions and separate storylines on each show. So it's not like you get eight more shows to build up a feud. You're getting four in reality. I mean, you get Dynamite on, what's Wednesday, the 2nd? So you got the 2nd, the 9th, the 16th, and the 23rd. You got four dynamites and four collisions. Actually, three collisions, because one of the collisions is going to be the same night as, I don't know how they're going to do that. It's going to be the same night as pay-per-view. But pay-per-view is probably going to be in the afternoon. Maybe that's how they get away with it. But still, you've got four dynamites and three collisions between. I'm not even counting Rampage because I don't even think people are watching it anymore.
No.
But you got four dynamites and three collisions to get people emotionally invested in the matches that are going to be on the show. But it doesn't seem like that's what they want to do. It seems like their selling point is just, we're going to have a lot of great moves. It's moves you've seen over and over again, but man, they're going to be great, and they're going to be in front of a lot more people this time. And when you're trying to sell, I mean, the Wembley show is going to sell itself, I think, because it's going to be the biggest show they've ever done in front of a huge audience. People are going to tune in large part just to see what the atmosphere is like. But you're also selling a pay-per-view 7 days after that, too.
Yep.
And that's where I think the storytelling, it really, I mean, you got to be trying to get people to emotionally invest in what you're doing if you're going to get them to shell out 50 or 55 bucks, whatever it is, on back-to-back weekends. And right now, it doesn't feel to me that they're moving very strongly in that direction.
No, unfortunately not. And that's the one I was going to bring up, too, is the fact that it's not just like one pay-per-view they have to build out in a month. It's two in the course of 5 weeks. Which is insane that they don't even have anything. I mean, if you like asked me to come up with like what are the top five most likely matches, I don't know if I could do it. I think Ospreay Jericho is rumored for one. I don't know what that leaves Omega. I don't know where that leaves the Bucks. I don't leave BCC, Punk, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they're gonna have to like he always says. We complain about this every single time. But he's just going to have to, like, Tony's just going to have to, like, cram everything into these next few weeks. Now just, like, doubly so. Even though he had the past few months to, you know, plan this all out. Like, he didn't just know that this was coming up. He's had this, like, you know, he's had this in mind for many months. He knew that this was coming up, and he just has been dragging his feet for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, it was frustrating. Like this past Saturday show was frustrating to me on a number of levels because, and I thought it was a good show.
Oh, same. Yeah, same.
But
yeah.
It was still frustrating on a number of levels because it's like, yes, these are the problems. And they don't seem to be willing to acknowledge that they're problems because they keep repeating it over and over. The cycle keeps repeating itself. So it's like, they don't even think that this is an issue, but believe me, it's an issue.
Yeah. And I'm with you. Like, I think it was a good show, but it's like, if they just made some tweaks and if they had some more patience and if they fixed a few things, like it could be a great show, you know, fairly regularly. You're not always going to knock it out of the park, but there's some like fairly easy fixes, and just, you know, that they're not doing. And that's what's frustrating.
And again, like, I think I've mentioned this before, but I go back to when I was in high school and the Attitude Era was cooking, right? Like,
yeah.
You felt like you couldn't miss a show.
Yeah.
Because so many things were going to happen over the course of that program, you would be behind. So you weren't, like, you couldn't miss a show because I can't afford to miss anything that's going to happen because so many storylines are going to be advanced over the course of this 2-hour program. And it was obviously wildly popular. Everyone's going to be talking about it the next day. You know, I think I told the story before. Like, I did not, if I couldn't watch the show on a Monday night and I had to tape it with a VHS tape on a VCR,
yeah,
I would normally, like, let's say I was out or something on a Monday, wasn't able to watch. I'd get up at like 5:30 in the morning to watch before I went to school the next day because I knew people in school were going to be talking about what happened the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And you felt like you couldn't be out of the loop. You couldn't fall behind. And it's easier, like, as good as these shows are, they are missable because not a lot happens on them from a storyline perspective. So if you miss a show, it's very easy to catch up the next week. And that's good. I mean, it keeps people engaged, I guess. Like, that, there's positives and negatives to it. But I don't know that you want anyone to ever describe your show as like, well, it's missable. Like, if I miss it, it's fine. It's no big deal. I can catch up pretty quickly. And not feel like you missed so much if you missed one episode. And that's like with AEW, I feel like you can miss a whole week's worth of TV and then just show up the next week and turn it on and not really miss much. Usually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially like this past week's Dynamite as well. I think that was one of the most lackluster ones they put on in a long time.
Last week's Dynamite was, yeah, I didn't think that was a very good show.
No, it was not a very good show. There was not a lot going on in that. I guess the biggest thing, maybe not the biggest thing, but, like, you know, they had like AR Fox turn heel out of nowhere and join the mobile. Was that Wednesday or was that Saturday even? Now I'm blanking.
No, that was Wednesday.
That was Wednesday.
Yeah, that was Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, so it was just like another like kind of illogical rushed heel turn, but nothing major that you missed. And yeah, they didn't give us like the next chapter in like the Elite should have been out like talking about their win. BCC should have been out like talking about their loss. Like, is there any repercussions to Wheeler Yuta giving up? You know, or like forcing them to give up? Like, nothing. We didn't get anything. No next chapter on that. So yeah, it was a very odd episode that didn't essentially move much forward.
I'm just going to read the matches that took place on Dynamite last week.
Yeah.
Orange Cassidy versus AR Fox. Pac versus Gravity. Darby Allin versus Swerve Strickland. Britt Baker versus Taya Valkyrie. And then the BCC versus the Lucha Brothers versus the Best Friends in a 3-way tag match.
Yeah, that's,
you know what,
probably
that sounds like?
Rampage?
Sounds like a 2-hour rampage.
That is probably the weakest. And I get, like, having a – you have to have, like, a bit of a come-down show because they just did Blood and Guts, but follow up on it. Like, that should be the follow-up. That should be the talking point of the show is, like, you do this big match once a year, and it's this match that they say, like, you know, can change careers forever. Well, like, talk about it. Like, how does Brian Danielson – I know he's hurt, but, like, he could record a video and say, like, man, I'm pissed. The BCC lost, like – what does John Moxley have to think? What does anyone have to think? Like, we don't know. They just beat up the Best Friends, and who cares? Like, they get beat up all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm reading Tyler Sage's report over at The Torch on pwtorch.com, and I'll just read his final thought because I think this is – it's funny. I did not read this before. We just said that sounds like an episode of Rampage. But Tyler Sage in his pwtorch.com report on last week's Dynamite says, final thought, this is a pretty rough show that felt more like 2 hours of Rampage than an episode of Dynamite. The watered-down roster feels very much that way when Jericho doesn't wrestle or any member of the Elite are present in any way.
Yeah.
Yes. I think Tyler hits the nail on the head. Okay, we've got emails to get to. We've got phone calls to get to. So let's start with some phone calls. Let's start with DJ in Miami. Hello, DJ. How are you tonight?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Going back, I guess, to the CM Punk thing, I feel like what you guys are saying is right, is that I feel like how he was acting like a heel and they're cooling down MJF, but I also feel like they are going to add that title into the picture. So So it's going to be one title on one picture and one title on the other side. I don't know why they're going to do this, but as you guys can really know, is CM Punk is the people's champion and MJF is just the world heavyweight champion. So it's just like maybe they're going to do that and they're going to collide both titles. I don't know, but to me it's like they're really cool and MJF really a lot, and I don't like that because he was a great heel. I know Punk's a good heel, but, you know, he always works in the middle. You know, he's never went full heel in a really long time like he used to, but, you know, the pipe bomb thing. But at the end of the day, what do you guys really think? Do you think they're going to collide those two titles at the end of the day, or what do you think at the end of the day? Because, I mean, he has his blood on it, so I don't know what they're going to do with that title.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Andrew, you could be right. They could end up doing some sort of unification match at Wembley. But if they're dead set on leaving MJF on Dynamite, and this, you know, they had the tag match on Collision, but in reality, he's not going to be on the show very much. Do you think Tony's looking at it going, I want a quote unquote world title on Collision, so we're going to do both? I don't know what you call it, but like, I almost feel like they are heading somewhere in that direction, because Punk, I mean, he put the X on the belt, which I just, it's still the world title, but it differentiates it a little bit. I don't know what they're going to call it. I don't think they're going to call them both the AEW world title, but what do you think ultimately ends up happening there?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're probably going to move to some sort of unification match, but I mean, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe they do like want to, you know, like Raw and SmackDown have their own titles or have their own titles, and I guess they do again. Like, is that what the ultimate goal is?
They just gave Seth one.
Yeah, pretty much. I wish they would just, like, elevate the TNT title, because, like, way back, you know, like, when Cody Rhodes had it and Brody Lee had it, like, it could main event an episode of the show. And I think just do something like that, elevate that title and not add an entirely new one again. But if they just introduce that, I imagine it probably is going to be around for a while. But I would hope they would, like, get rid of it fairly soon in a unification match.
I just don't like that they're doing this when MJF was so hot. I mean, he was so hot as a heel, and then they just do, I don't know, some weird thing. I don't know why they would just do this. I mean, I understand Punk is very popular, but not like this, you know what I'm saying? I mean, he should have won title, and I'm sick of 10,000 belts.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of see both sides of it. I can understand Tony thinking that there's someone you have to build around on that brand, but I also think, Andrew, you're right. Like, you could use the TNT title, especially because that show's on TNT. Like, Collision's on TNT, so it would make sense to make the TNT title kind of Collision's world title, and then you've got championship matches you can put on both shows. But, yeah, I don't know.
Let me ask you one more thing before I go to the next question. Do you think that they'll put, like, the Saturday show as their own pay-per-view sooner or later? Or, like, do you think that they're just going to keep on pushing it, you know, like just regular pay-per-views? Because they said they want to do more pay-per-views a year. That's what I heard.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
I heard that they're going to do a new contract. They're going to have more pay-per-views a year. So maybe Saturday will be its own pay-per-view. Just like SmackDown and Raw?
Oh, I mean, I guess they could do that. They could do, you're saying, like, Collision-only pay-per-views almost?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I heard that they from the Grapevine, that they might sign a new contract that they want more pay-per-views a year.
Yes, I think I did read that, too. I mean, I guess that's possible. Although, outside of the NFL season, they usually do them on Sundays. I mean, their whole schedule is messed up, so I don't really know. I also don't know what Warner Brothers Discovery cares about them doing pay-per-views unless they're on one of WBD's streaming services, which is a possibility as well, right, if they put them on Max or something. Outside of that, you know, they really would have no business over their pay-per-view business. So it is to answer your question, Andrew, I don't know if you have a better guess than I do, but like I don't know. But I have heard that, yes, there was some talk about potentially expanding their pay-per-view viewings with – which – I'm not entirely on board with right now because they don't do a very good job of building to these pay-per-views. Their pay-per-views are always good, but they just don't do a very good job building to them.
Yeah.
But maybe, I think we said this last week or the week before, if they do that, if they have to go in that direction, maybe that does give Tony some logical ending points and makes him a better booker from a storyline standpoint, because there's kind of logical things that you're building to on a month-to-month basis.
Yeah, my guess is that for now they wouldn't do, like, specific, you know, like how they used to do Raw pay-per-views, then a SmackDown, then Raw, then SmackDown, then, like, a joint one. I would guess not for now, unless they did, like, a defined roster split. I mean, it seems right now there's, like, 15 or so people that are pretty much exclusive to Collision, but I think you would need more people, like, solidified on each brand to be able to do something like that. And Tony hasn't really indicated that he'll do that. I wouldn't rule it out, though, but I think unlikely in the near future.
I guess we'll see. My next thing is something fun. Going into this, that's kind of funny, is that, like, they put so much money in their video games. They said, oh, we put millions of dollars in. And guess what? It's still broken. And people are like, we want a patch out yet. And I feel like, you know, it's kind of funny is that this falls on who? The Elite. The Elite built it. The Elite did this. So I feel like it'd be kind of funny if CM Punk was clowning him about that. And, you know, they would hate the Elite more. But it's just, it really hates going towards Tony compared to, you know, these guys. So it's kind of funny, you know, how they're saying all this craziness about, oh, it shouldn't have came out. But they're like, yeah, we wanted it out.
Yeah, I haven't played the game, but I have heard that there's been some glitchiness issues to them, or to it. yeah, it's interesting because it's their first game, so you kind of expect there to be some issues. But it doesn't seem like it's getting great reviews, Andrew. I don't know if you've played it yet, have you?
No, had it got good reviews, I was planning on getting it like right away, like day one. But yeah, look, like most of the reviews are like 6 out of 10, which in video game reviews is like a 3, because video game review sites barely ever give bad reviews. It's almost always, you know, 7, 8, 9s. So there's probably quite a bit wrong with it. I'm sure I'll get it when it's like $20. But yeah, I've been following just like on Reddit and people complaining and saying this and posting videos of people cheating online and like matches, you know, not going long enough and trouble kicking out. And as of now, I hear people are frustrated because there's no like roadmap of that. And yeah, I know Kenny was instrumental in that game. I don't think Punk would probably take a shot at him like on air about it, because then you're basically telling people the game sucks. that would deter others from buying it. But hopefully they fix that thing, and then I'll get it one of these days.
I just thought it was funny because they said how much they bragged about how much money they put into it. I just thought that was kind of funny, and then it doesn't even work. Mm-hmm. I guess. My last thing is going into, I guess, Saturday with Cody Rhodes and Brock. I feel like at the end of the day, I don't know what's going to happen, because I don't know, Brock is what, going to go away again? But I feel like at the end of the day, something's going to happen with the Royal Rumble. Somebody's going to DQ them, or something's going to do something, whoever wins that, because it's like, where are they both going to go at the end of the day? Is Brock going to go to Seth Rollins because he has the belt and he couldn't fight, you know, Roman? Or what is really going to go on? Because, you know, Cody wants to finish his journey, but I don't see that ever going because of this bloodline nonsense. So at the end of the day, where do these guys go next?
Brock strikes me as a guy who's just, I'm here to get my paycheck. Let me know what you want me to do. You know, I'll do my 10-minute Brock Lesnar match. It's not going to be any different. You know, if I got to lose, fine, I got to lose. I don't really care. Like, so I think Cody does go over. And honestly, I think Cody has to go over because Brock, again, like Brock is on the back nine. Brock probably doesn't have a ton of matches left, to be quite honest with you. Physically, I think he can still do it. I don't think he's hurt or anything like that. But he strikes me as a guy that just, he doesn't care all that much. Like, it's just, this is the job for him. And that's fine. And that's not please don't, you know, take that negatively. Like, that's okay. This doesn't have to be, like, everything your whole identity does not have to be you as a professional wrestler. He's got a lot of stuff going on outside, including family stuff. And, like, this is a job for him. And that's totally cool. But I think, you know, Cody is the exact opposite. Like, Brock does not let being a pro wrestler define him. Cody Cody's definition is he's a pro wrestler, right? It's his whole life. So if this feels like a match that Cody has to win, just because it'd be a nice big win over Brock. I don't think Brock cares. Who knows when Brock's even going to be around when the match is over, Andrew. Like, he may lose and go away until WrestleMania next year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Cody is almost a lock to win. If Brock wins, like, he's not going to come for Roman Reigns again. He can't challenge for that title again. So it's all just to set up, like, Cody versus Roman. I don't know what the next chapter is. I'm not, like, super dialed into WWE at the moment. So, like, off the top of my head, I don't know who his next opponent would be, Cody. But, I think it's certainly he's on the road to, you know, taking down Reigns at WrestleMania, and Brock will probably just come back at, like, Survivor Series, maybe.
Yeah, it would be a big show. I mean, he'd have to come back for a big show. That's when they're going to bring him in. But, I agree with you. I don't see Cody losing. And, I guess they'll put him back on the path of meeting with Reigns again. It seems to be the logical conclusion to what they're doing now. But we'll see. You don't know. They might do something with Jay. I mean, who knows? We don't know where it's going to go. Anything else, DJ?
Real quick. Because, like, I just find, like, what they're doing with the Royal Rumble thing is, like, they're a little lazy. Like, they're just doing something like that. And I feel like the winner is just going to go Cody or go Brock. That's what I was asking. Like, I don't know. It's kind of strange how this is going to do a Royal Rumble thing. And Royal Rumble's coming around the block. So it's like, what are they doing? You know, they never done that for SummerSlam before. You know what I'm saying? So I was just confused on that one, you know?
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know if it's just – I believe tickets at Ford Field in Detroit are selling well, but do they feel like they need some sort of gimmick to sell tickets? I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know.
I guess that's it. You know, it was just nothing too crazy this week, you know. So it wasn't, you know, nothing major I saw that popped out. Yeah, I don't know if you guys caught the Hulk Hogan thing when he did his interview talking craziness. I don't know if you guys caught that.
No, but I'm intrigued. What did he say?
Yeah, he was saying, like, craziness about, like, how he got his name back from Marvel and some Ric Flair stories and some craziness. So I thought that was kind of funny. But that was...
I'll have to look that up. So how he got his name back from Marvel.
Yeah, that's what he says. He said all this nonsense. It's on YouTube. Yep.
I'm going to have to check it out.
He says that he said, like, at the end of the day that WWE and Marvel had something going on and they got in a fight and WWE won, and he said, instead of paying you this money, I'll give you the Hulk Hogan name. But Hulk Hogan said that was his shot first. So it's like, what? I don't know. Half the stuff you can't even believe out of his mouth. He said some crazy. It's like... Yeah, he was going to play baseball and all this. Like, he started, what did he say? He made Metallica or something. I don't know. This guy is crazy. I don't know. There's some craziness. Did you hear about that one? That he was going to be the guitarist for Metallica? Did you hear about that one?
I heard something like that once. Yeah, that's not a ton of truth.
So yeah, just look up Hulk. Oh God, I wish I can tell you. It was a comedy podcast with Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
Something Vaughn.
I think his name is. Yeah, we'll find it.
Yeah, that's it. So yeah, check that out, cool. And then we'll talk next week, and you tell me what you guys think of it.
Sounds good. Thanks for the call, as always. We'll talk to you next week, probably.
Thanks.
All right. Yeah, I'll have to. Hulk Hogan tends to not have a whole lot of accuracy in the things that he says, Andrew, most of the time, I would say.
Yeah, he recently said, too, that him and Vince McMahon, like, should have bought, like, had the opportunity to buy UFC and, like, how he regrets it. And maybe that's true, but I don't believe it. why would Vince be like, Hulk, I can't afford this. Like, you and me got to go in on this together. Like, he also said that he was like, he could have been the George Foreman grill guy. Like, that was offered to him first.
Oh, I did hear that. Yes.
Yeah. So he should be like a billionaire by now.
Yeah. It was funny. I watched for the first time, I was bored over the weekend, and I watched the Rise and Fall of WCW DVD that WWE did probably years ago.
I remember not liking that, like, anywhere near as much as that ECW one. What do you think?
Yeah, I didn't like it very much either. but it was interesting to me because there was a lot of clips in there from older interviews. Mm-hmm. And there was a clip that they used of Hogan talking about how he was going to turn at Bash at the Beach and become this guy in the NWO and everything. And the story he told of how it happened is not the story that I've heard from any other person involved over the course of the last 20 or 30 years. The story was always they didn't know if Hulk was going to do it. Bischoff was trying to get Hulk to do it. And it almost took up until the last minute for Hogan to agree because, you know, he wasn't sure he wanted to go heel. Like night of the show, like Sting was the backup plan. That's the widely accepted story.
Yeah.
To Hogan turning at Bash on the Beach. According to Hulk Hogan, in a 2002 interview, which they played on this DVD, Hogan said that into a meeting with Ted Turner and Eric Bischoff, and the meeting was about, what can we do in wrestling? It's never been done before. And they just sat there racking their brains like, what can we do that's never been done? And then Hogan said, and then I looked at Ted and Eric and I said, what if I become a bad guy?
Wow.
So that was that's Hulk Hogan's version of how he became the third man in the NWO. He seems to be the only person that has that version, but that's his version.
I always wondered if he believes it. Like, there's a episode of South Park where, like, Cartman comes up with, like, he thinks he comes up with, like, the world's greatest joke. And... like, he truly believes it. And, like, I think Kyle, like, confronts him, and he's like, you know what? I believe that you actually believe that. Like, it didn't happen, but I believe that you believe it. And I was like, I wonder if that's Hogan.
I've been watching, and when I go to bed at night, I've been watching Seinfeld, old mm-hmm. episode on Netflix, and there was an episode where Jerry's trying to pass a lie detector test.
Oh, yeah.
because he's dating a police sergeant who said something about Melrose Place.
And yeah.
Jerry denies that he was watching Melrose Place, and she puts him on a polygraph machine, and he goes to George to figure out how he's going to get away with the how he's going to get through the lie detector test. How's he going to fool the machine? And George said to him, Jerry, remember, it's not a lie if you believe it. And that's what I think of with Hogan all the time. It's not a lie if you believe it.
Yeah.
And I'm to his credit, I think he believes it.
I'm not sure if I hope he does, like, because then it's out of his mind. But then also, like, why would you be so, you know, to make all that stuff up? I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to some emails. First, let's see here. Let's go to Dustin. Dustin D. sends the email.
All right.
He says, not a question, though maybe either show. Oh, he's also sent this to the Fix mailbag as well. Though maybe either show could discuss a really interesting post containing an objective fact about a subjective rating. On one of the Daily Cast, a host said if Daniel Bryan had been having his WWE matches in AEW or New Japan, he would have 87 matches with 5 stars. Two factors at play. AEW, oh, I actually heard Todd and Wade discuss this. AEW is massively tailored to the Observer 5-star style. Just like any influential rating system causes ripple effects in their industries, especially subjective ones, i.e. like the Parker has on the type of wines produced, I understand you saying. Further, Meltzer doesn't like WWE, so he rates down even if the match tailors to him. The fact that there's a finisher named after Dave and he gives those guys a lot of stars shows the issue. This connects with my fixed comment about Will Ospreay having 100 five-star matches. So the question is, do we think – Todd and Wade discussed this on the Fixed Mailbag last week – or this past weekend. I was listening to it when I was in my car. This is actually – he screenshots a couple of social media posts here, one saying that AEW is just 3 matches away from having more five-star matches than WWE and WCW combined. Which
oh, wow.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Another one that says, further proof that AEW and Tony Khan are the best thing that ever happened to the wrestling industry. AEW has produced basically as many top quality matches in 4 years as WWE and WCW have done in 80-plus years combined. AEW is by far the greatest North American wrestling promotion of all time. Thank you, Tony Khan. Thank you, Kenny Omega. Thank you, Young Bucks. You saved an entire industry from a tyrannical monopoly of a rapist. Ooh.
Whoa.
But, yes, so look to what we were talking about earlier, I think, Andrew, but this is a fun topic to discuss. AEW's style is definitely more catered to the rating system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But again, like, I can watch a five-star match and appreciate the fact that it's a five-star match. But if I don't care about the people in the match, it's really hard for me to sit there and go, I can't wait to watch that again.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I get that their style is more conducive to the star rating scale, but some of the biggest matches I remember were not that I remember watching live in person or even on TV were not necessarily five-star matches, but I remember them because I was more invested in what was going on at the time. Does that make sense?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So I would have to think, so I think part of that is, one, it does sound like pretty crazy that AEW has that many five-star matches, but also you'd have to like look at the opportunity as well, because like look at old WrestleManias, like WrestleMania like 1 through 9 for sure. Like they had like 4-minute matches, and it was just like 4-minute match, like 6-minute match. Like there's no way any of those matches are going to become like five-star matches. It wasn't until maybe like the mid-90s where it seems like wrestlers had the enough time to have the opportunity to do something like that. Whereas like AEW, you know, wrestlers get 15, 20 minutes, you know, pretty much every week. And pay-per-views, that's like, you know, 6-7 matches that go that long. So there's more chances for that to happen. So it is a little crazy, but it maybe not like as insane as it sounds, because like you're not going to get like Greg Valentine versus Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Like that's not going to be 5 stars. Like it just didn't matter that much. But yeah, I don't know. I have not also heard Todd and Wade talk about it yet. I think I'm a week behind on the fix, but, so I don't know what they came to the conclusion of, but, I would, and I mean, sorry, I know I'm all over the place right now, but like same with like WCW too as well, because you would get cruiserweight matches, which were fantastic, but I bet those went like 12 minutes at most. So they would probably got like a lot of like, you know, 3 and 3/4, 4-star matches, but they weren't going to reach 5 stars because, again, they didn't go like 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not to sound like the grouchy old man here either, but, like, what's the goal? The goal is to make money.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like I go back, and this is kind of off topic but kind of related. It was an interview. I think it was an old interview clip, but it was an interview that Al Snow was doing with somebody, and he was like, people talk about all the time, like, oh, that guy's a great worker. This guy's a great worker. And he said, people have no idea what they're talking about. And I think he was right on. He was like, the best workers in the history of the business are the ones that made the most money. Like, everyone goes, oh, Hulk Hogan wasn't a great worker. Why? Because he didn't have 5-star matches? Like, Hulk Hogan made more money than almost anybody. Like, by definition, he was a good worker. Like,
mm-hmm.
People misconstrue this idea that, like, only the good wrestlers have 5-star matches. But again, like, if you're not drawing big crowds and you're having these 5-star matches that nobody cares about, nobody sees, what's the point? It doesn't make you great at anything. The whole idea is you're supposed to be preying on people's emotions and getting them to, you know, emotionally invest in what you're doing. And you can do all the moves and have great matches, but if nobody cares, is it a 5-star match if nobody cares? And that's not a criticism strictly of AEW, excuse me. But, you know, the 5-star matches that took place in front of 400 people in Japan that nobody have seen, I don't know. But it's like it's all these different things. But in short, why does AEW have so many of them? I think it's because their style is conducive to the star rating scale. And sometimes, I mean, that's good, but also it's not always best either.
Yeah, and I would say, like, for me, like what you're saying, it's about, like, more than, like, the storylines and the characters. Like, my favorite matches of all time, like, Hogan Warrior, that's way up there, Hogan Rock at WrestleMania 18, like, not clinics at all.
Like, no.
But the crowd was insanely into them, and they did a lot with having to do very little. Like, they got a lot out of what they were doing without taking, like, any crazy bumps. Like, as far as I remember, I don't think Hogan took, like, a Canadian Destroyer in that match or anything.
I'm going to go with a no.
So, yeah, I mean, those are the ones that stick out. Bash at the Beach, like, 96, and the big moments in Austin and Undertaker, and, yeah. To me, those are the ones that still, like, stick out for me.
Zach in Texas, having watched wrestling for over 25 years, it's very rare when a booking decision genuinely surprises me. I can normally see most things coming. I did not, however, see Adam Cole and MJF ending Collision still friends. For the entirety of the post-match, I waited for one of them to turn on the other, but it never happened. Credit to Tony Khan for taking the unexpected road. Cole and MJF as a duo are ridiculously over. They actually managed to get a double clothesline, over as a major spot in the year of our Lord, 2023. It just makes sense to keep the party going for a little while longer. Also, keeping MJF face for now was also a smart move, given that CM Punk finally turned heel. Did he?
I think he's testing the waters, because he did bust out the I'm better than you line.
He did.
I don't think it was a full, but he's also bringing in Ricky Steamboat, which is not traditional.
That's not really a heel thing. Yeah. Well, Zach, I should have continued here. Zach said, before you disagree, everything Punk did with his title belt was a heel turn. He used Ric Flair's real world champion catchphrase from 92, acted like Shawn Michaels circa 94 with I Never Lost in spite of the title being vacated, and desecrated the AEW title with spray paint like Hulk Hogan in 96. That makes him a heel, bringing in Ultimate Babyface Ricky Steamboat aside. Well, no, I don't think that could be an aside.
Why is that an aside? You can't say it.
I think that's part of it. I don't necessarily disagree with everything Zach said there. He did act somewhat heelish, including the I'm straight edge and I'm better than you line, like you said, Andrew. But he also is bringing in Ricky Steamboat, who's the biggest, ultimate, most ultimate babyface of all time, doesn't really jive with a full-fledged heel turn.
Yeah, I like that saying, like, you know, Hogan was basically a babyface at the end of Bash in the Beach 96 if you ignore him, like, dropping Randy Savage a bunch of times.
Yeah, yeah. As that continues, my suggestion would be to set up a rematch between FDR and Better Than You, Baby, for Wembley and put the belts on them. Those 75,000 people would lose their minds. A week later, babyface MJF goes over Punk in Chicago to a raucous ovation. By the time the turn comes in mid-October, whoever turns, you've got a hot world title match at Full Gear. I mean, I don't necessarily hate that idea, although I don't know that MJF over Punk is going to get a huge ovation in Chicago. I think
that's
it'd be mixed.
It'd
be mixed at best. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a completely pro-Punk crowd either, especially if he's healing, but
right.
I do think it would be more mixed, would be my guess.
I think so, too. Do you think Cole is more likely to turn on MJF at this point?
Ooh, at this point, maybe.
Yeah, that's where I'm leaning. I think
and keep MJF a babyface.
Yeah, and I'm not arguing saying it's a good idea, but I think that's where this is headed now.
You might be right, and that would not have been, I guarantee you, was not the original plan when they went into this.
No, but yeah, I mean, with everything with Roderick Strong going on, I could see him, like, you know, taking off the neck brace and being like, we fooled you guys. And
yeah. No, that's a good point. And then also he says, one note, Tony Khan needs to keep Ian Riccoboni on the call for Collision. He's much more in tune with the product than Kevin Kelly. It makes for a better listening experience. It's got a $5 challenge. We'll get to that in a little bit. I mean, I don't mind Ian Riccoboni. I actually like him. I like Kevin Kelly as well. I think Kevin was coming along. I mean, now he's missed a big chunk of time here because of the G1. But Riccoboni's good. I like Riccoboni.
I would take Riccoboni. Yeah. I don't think it's a huge difference, but I think Riccoboni brings more energy to it. But I still like Kevin Kelly as well. So both pairings are good for me.
Let's see here. Up next is Cody. Cody says, hey guys, love the show. It's one of my favorites in the Torch lineup. I never miss a show. The $5
right.
challenge is super over. It's the best part of the show.
Awesome.
I mean, I don't even really want to go on with this question. I'm good with just that. But no, anyway, Cody says my question. What did you guys think of the CM Punk recent Collision promo? More specifically, what did you think about his oddly specific mention that he is the guy, quote, making his dates in shows, end quote? Who do you think he is may have been referring to? Was that a dig at the Elite? Thanks. Yeah, that was a weird one.
That was, yeah.
I don't know who he was referring to. he was the guy that makes his dates and shows, even though, yeah, he said, like, travel's been rough, but I'm the guy who makes my dates and shows, or something like, something to that effect. Now, the Elite wasn't on the show this week, and I know I happened to watch Being the Elite 2 weeks ago, or not today, but like last Monday,
yeah.
And one of the Jacksons was going on a vacation to Hawaii or something, so maybe that's why. I don't know if they all took the week off after that. I don't know who that was a dig at, but it definitely was a dig at someone.
Yeah, knowing Punk, it probably was. I mean, at first I was just like, well, maybe he's just saying, like, he takes pride in that, that no matter what, he's going to be that guy that does that. But I don't know who doesn't. Like, and I haven't read anything online either, because, you know, when he took his last dig at the Bucks, that was a big thing. But nothing that I've seen popped up, but it's likely that that was probably aimed at someone.
I mean, total guess. This is not me reporting anything, please. But were the Elite maybe asked to be on last Wednesday's Dynamite and then bailed?
Possible. I mean,
you know, or
I have no idea.
Were they given the week off because, hey, you're going to have Blood and Guts. It's going to be, you know, a hard match. We're going to give you a week off after that. And then Tony said, you know, last minute, can you make it anyway? We're short. We need a promo or whatever, and they said no. You gave us a night off. We're not coming. Mm-hmm. But something, because it was an oddly lackluster Dynamite from a star power standpoint.
Yeah,
and we talked about that earlier. So I don't know. If it was a dig at anyone, I would venture to bet it was a dig at someone in the Elite.
Most likely, yeah. I can't imagine it would be like Kip Sabian. He was going after.
Yeah, I don't think so, but. Maybe. Who knows? Jose from Golden Valley is next. Mike, we'll hold off on the Nacho Libre debate for another time because I have a question for you. Considering last Saturday's collision went up against UFC 291 and Spence versus Crawford, how as a fan did you feel spread thin? NXT had their show the next night. WWE has pay-per-views on Saturdays. College football and Major League Baseball playoffs are not far off. Boxing has big cards, and Miocic versus Jones at MSG in November will be a big one as well. Everybody's talking about All In possibly having 80,000 paid, but nobody's realizing a huge handicap AEW always has placed themselves in, and that's merchandise. They aren't the dog and duck trying to sell you a set of dominoes. They're run by a billionaire with offices in London. They should be absolutely stacked with merch by August. PWTs should be chucked out the door, a la DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, if their quote-unquote team can't sort this out. I'll get to more of Jose's email in a second. But, yeah, Saturday night, I did not see everything. It's why I watched Collision on Sunday, because I was moving around between the UFC show, which was a big show, and then, yeah, Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford was a big boxing match. I wanted to watch that. So there was a lot on Saturday. And I think Jose's right, and there was no college football yet, there was no Major League Baseball playoffs yet, but it's all coming, and the UFC and boxing is not going to go away when that stuff comes. So there's going to start being a lot of competition for Collision on Saturdays. That's why I'm interested in what the Collision numbers are for this week, because they were up against a really big UFC pay-per-view and a really big boxing pay-per-view, all happening at the same time.
Ouch. Yeah, it's gonna get rough for them. I imagine it's gonna take quite a big chunk of their weekly viewership coming up soon.
He says he's glad Meltzer brought up the merch thing, because you have 80,000 people coming into Wembley with money burning a hole in their pocket. If they don't have the infrastructure in place to deal with that, someone needs to be fired. I know Logan Paul brings up massive hatred out of Mike as much as Big Match John does to Dr. Evil. But I'm excited to see him and Ricochet have a balls-out insane match with tons of viral spots. Hopefully, they pay homage to the original Ricochet versus Will Ospreay standoff spot. Finally, with SummerSlam this Sunday, I wanted to know, how much did you guys enjoy SummerSlam 2002, and why do you guys think it's revered so much? We've got a $5 challenge. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Let's start with Logan Paul. I mean, Andrew, I think you and I are on record. We don't like him. Like, I don't like the idea of Logan Paul. He annoys me. It annoys me that he's as famous as he is and as rich as he is, because I don't think he's that talented, like, on YouTube. Just, like, you're an idiot making YouTube videos.
Yeah.
I think you got very lucky. As a wrestler, it's unbelievable what he's done with hardly any training. Like, it's literally amazing. He's fantastic.
Yeah. I'm on record as being I think he's super talented in the ring. Like you said, he's a ding dong, not inside the wrestling world. I've said this before.
That's going to be the quote from this show. He's a ding dong. I like that.
I will 100% take him as the world champ over Seth Rollins. I find Seth Rollins way more annoying. I know I say that every few weeks, but I gotta work that in. So yeah, Logan Paul, thumbs up. And I'm looking forward to that match. And I hope he wins once because the guy never wins.
Yeah. In the ring, I mean, it's honestly amazing what he's done. Basically, his entire career coming on pay-per-view or at least on television, it's unbelievable how good he looks in the ring. It really is. It's a credit to him. It shows how good he is as an athlete that he's picked it up so quickly. It's stunning.
The SummerSlam 2002, do you think it's most well-remembered and loved because of Undertaker versus Test?
I mean, that's definitely up there.
I had to pull up the card.
Definitely up there.
That's up there.
I'm a big Shawn Michaels fan, so I always look at the rebirth of Shawn Michaels as being kind of the highlight for me on that show. But that was a very good pay-per-view.
Yeah, and I think that's Brock's really that's when they made him like a superstar, right? Like he won that title and beat The Rock clean enough, I think. But yeah, it looks like a stacked. I think there's just, so many Angle versus Mysterio, Flair versus Jericho, Edge for Guerrero. Those are, dream matches. So it's probably, just hit at the right time and with people in their primes. RVD versus Benoit as well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Alex in Minneapolis, I saw Cody's Peacock documentary and thought it was well put together. Tony Khan and the Jaguars lawyer forcing Cody to take the real story on leaving AEW with him to the grave is so lame. I swim in Niagara Falls level of tears at the Elite Fanboys shout out to Triple H referred to AEW as a secondary promotion. The hypocrisy of these idiots is hilarious. Andrew's boy Jericho.
Ugh.
Boy, Andrew. Very proudly claimed that they will beat Raw in 6 months. Kingston and Mox made multiple rah-rah speeches after shows that were shared everywhere claiming how they are better than WWE. Khan always boasts about winning the imaginary Friday Night War. And even small things, like being the number one promotion in the UK, by what standard, I don't know. Kenny proclaimed NXT stars wouldn't even be curtain openers on his show. Let's not pretend it's just Cody. That was the one who went to war. Cody carried himself as an actual boss and AEW brand leader. There's a reason why he represented the company on the Rich Eisen show and not those other clowns. All the Bucks did in the lead up to Dynamite was brag while being EVPs and getting their friends jobs. Omega barely did any press, and when he did, he acted like he was a performance artist. My dude, you're not Andy Warhol. Also, I feel that this isn't talked about enough. Mike's favorite podcaster.
Oh, boy.
Carnrad. I see what you did there. Having influence. Pritchard has always been, and he confirmed as to being the only one who reached out to Cody once he was without a contract. Conrad Thompson is a Cody guy and stooge off to Pritchard. Tony Schiavone even said that when he had talks with WWE, he told the son-in-law, who then stooged off to Cody and Tony Khan. Not only is the son-in-law a shady home lender, but he knows way more than he leads on. Dollar challenge as well. Yeah, some conspiracy theories in there from Alex. I don't know that I believe them, but nonetheless, they are there.
I don't know. Yeah, that's possible, but maybe it's far-fetched. I don't know.
Andrew, do you know what time it is?
Ooh, I have an inkling.
$5 challenge.
Waiting all week.
Yeah, I mean, haven't we all?
Well, I guess it's Monday, but still.
It's Monday, but.
Been waiting all week, I guess.
All week. Yeah, I mean, we've been waiting. Yeah, no, it's fine. We've been waiting for a week. It's been a week since we've done it. So.
Yeah.
I'm willing to say we've been waiting all week for this.
Okay. I'll go with that.
Great. Let's see. Who shall we do first here? Why is this glitching on me? Why is this glitching on me, Andrew?
I am nervous.
hold on, we have to figure this out because I cannot have this happen.
Cannot.
Unacceptable.
Ridiculous.
No, I think we've got it figured out here. Okay, great.
Okay.
I just needed to pull up. I had to relaunch my email application to get it to work, but luckily we are okay. Let's go to Jose's $5 challenge first. Jose says, we will continue with the WWE pay-per-view theme songs category, which is another batch of 5 different pay-per-views and 5 different years by mainstream artists. So basically, he gives us the artist and the show name, and we need to come up with the song.
Okay. Okay. I think we got one last week, right?
I think we did. Yeah, okay. I think we did.
Let's see
what we got here. 2003 SummerSlam. 2003 SummerSlam, and the artist was Metallica. I have no idea.
This is like a genre of music I know very little about. The only Metallica, this may probably be embarrassing, but the only Metallica song I can probably name is Enter Sandman, and I'm quite sure it was not that.
No, I don't think so either. I'm going to guess Fuel.
Fuel. Okay. Fuel.
Give me fire. Give me that which I desire. Ooh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, Survivor Series 2008, AC/DC.
The only one song of theirs I know is Highway to Hell, and they did that for SummerSlam 98, I believe.
Yeah, I know this because I was at the show.
Wow!
That was Survivor Series 2008 was in Boston. That was, I'm almost positive it was Spoiling for a Fight.
Oh, that sounds a fitting song.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm almost positive. He's throwing in a 2009 one here. Breaking Point 2009, Lynyrd Skynyrd.
I'm guessing it. So I know two songs of theirs.
Yeah, me too.
I'm guessing.
I know the same two.
Freebird?
Yeah. I don't think it's Freebird.
I wish they would. And Sweet Home Alabama.
Yeah, I don't think it might not be that either. But of those two songs, I mean, what would be the better pay-per-view song?
For humor, Freebird, but I think maybe it was in Alabama and they did Sweet Home Alabama.
Let's go Sweet Home Alabama. Probably wrong, but you never know. Number four, TLC 2010, My Chemical Romance is the band.
Oh, is that the Jared Leto one? No, that's 30 Seconds to Mars.
That's 30 Seconds to Mars. Similar. My Chemical Romance. They have a song called Helena that I remember listening to.
Oh, that is
was out around that time.
I love it. That's one more than I know of their songs.
All right, well, let's go Helena then. No clue. Total guess. Number five, Elimination Chamber 2012. The band, the very popular Nickelback.
Ugh. Barf.
Yeah, that song from that Spider-Man movie.
Hero, and they say it. Oh.
Yeah.
I hear what I'm saying.
That's how it goes, yeah.
They have Rockstar.
That's right.
They have, which, that's probably a bottom five all-time song for me, that Rockstar song is inside.
That's pretty bad.
What? I'm trying to think of what their big one was, back when we were in high school, but I can't even think of what it is.
I don't remember either. How's it go? I know it. I heard it, of course.
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up.
They have Photograph. Probably wasn't that.
Oh, How You Remind Me. That's what it was.
This is how. Yeah.
Oh, that was terrible.
Yeah, they're all terrible.
They're all bad, wow.
They're all really bad.
Burn It to the Ground. Wasn't that a...
Oh, is that one?
That was a Raw theme song, I think, at one point, wasn't it?
Oh, they did have a
burn it to the ground and
oh.
Ooh.
Oh, that was a that bad time.
Why? Well, so could that be the Elimination Chamber 2012
that
theme?
And that
then they used
it
for Raw.
I like that. I like that.
Burn it to burn it to the ground. Seth Rollins can use that as his theme.
Oh, it's probably a step up.
Okay, let's see how we did. SummerSlam 2003, Metallica. We guessed Fuel. The correct answer was Saint Anger, which is, I mean, makes sense. I know that's a good song. That would work. 2008 Survivor Series, Spoiling for a Fight is what our guess was for AC/DC. That is correct. Spoiling for a Fight. I remember them playing the song over and over and over again at that show. It was like nonstop between matches. Lynyrd Skynyrd sang a song for Breaking Point 2009. Our guess was Sweet Home Alabama. Correct answer is Still Unbroken.
Oh. Dang.
We guessed Helena for My Chemical Romance 2010, Table, Ladders, and Chairs. The correct answer was na 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 na.
That's the name of a song?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 nas. So na 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 na.
Wow. That's kind
one
of
for
amazing.
Four. One for four. Burn It to the Ground is what we had as the Nickelback song for Elimination Chamber 2012. The correct answer was This Means War.
Damn it. Well, we didn't get shut out.
We didn't get shut out, but we went one for five. One for five. All right.
Still stings.
Back to Zach, and we know what Zach's theme is, right?
Ooh.
Yes. Zach plays The Price is Right.
Oh, I feel like running.
are the next contestant.
Giving Bob Barker a hug.
Come on down. Can Andrew finally win one? Zach wants to know.
Probably not.
Or will my streak continue? So, the way this works, if you haven't listened to the show before, Zach gives us five items wrestling related that he found on YouTube. And we have to bid on those items. And the closest one to get to the actual retail price without going over gets the point. Now, we changed it a little bit last week, and I think it works better. One of us bid, and then... So, I've been ahead. So I will bid on the 1, 3, and 5. Andrew will bid on 2 and 4. And the other person has the opportunity to say higher or lower on the bid. Because that's basically all we were doing anyway. Like, I would bid 50. And if Andrew thought it was higher, he would say 51. And if Andrew thought it was lower, he would say $1. Because there's only two of us bidding. There's not five of us here. So one of us will bid. The other person will go higher or lower. And that's how... That's how we play. We modified the game a little bit.
A modification, yeah. This is fun, though. This is a good addition.
I like it. Okay, up first, and I will be the first bidder here, on a vintage 1990s WCW NWO folder wallet.
What's a folder wallet? Oh, just a wallet that folds?
Probably.
I was picturing like a folder, like from school, and then
it's also a
wallet. Yeah.
So NWO, vintage 90s NWO wallet. That feels to me like a $25 item.
I'm taking the under on this. My guess is that's about an $8 item.
Andrew's going under. Okay. The next item up for bids, a vintage WWF Attitude Era skateboard, Andrew.
Is there a wrestler on it, or it's just a WWF?
He says WWF Attitude Era skateboard.
I feel skateboards might be more of a collectible. People seem to like those.
I feel like you're probably right.
And I think they're usually made of decent material. This is a complete guess. I've never skateboarded. So
I don't know what a new skateboard goes. Is a skateboard?
That's true.
A $50 item or a $100 item? I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm going to go $55.
$55. Okay. I'm going to take the over on that. I think we may be looking at a $100 item.
You could be right. You could definitely be right.
All right. Next item. I have to bid on this. A WWE t-shirt memorabilia lot featuring t-shirts of Carlito, Mr. Kennedy, and Santino, Roman Reigns wristbands and gloves, and some Bray Wyatt swag. A lot going on there. So a Carlito shirt, Mr. Kennedy shirt, Santino shirt, a Roman Reigns set of wristbands and gloves, and a Bray Wyatt swag. So let me kind of piece this together here. Carlito, Kennedy, and Santino t-shirts. I'm going to say $15 a shirt is $45. I'm going to say the Roman Reigns wristband and glove set is another $10. That's $55. Throw the Bray Wyatt swag in there. Let's say that's $10 and $65. I'm going to go with $65, Andrew.
The big question mark is what the Wyatt swag is. Is it like a Hawaiian shirt and some his hat? Or you're going $65? I'm going to go over. That's a tough one.
All right, Andrew.
But I'm going to guess it's like, yeah, $60 to $80 range as well.
Okay.
But I'm going over.
All right. Next item, a vintage WCW NWO Sting versus DDP thumb wrestling game.
I kind of want this. I'm going to say a thumb wrestling game, $18?
$18. I'm feeling that's a tough bid. I'm going to go over, but I don't feel good about it.
Yeah, I don't know what it looks like, if it's super cheap or like what. I don't know what it's thumb wrestling. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, me neither. Okay, and then the final item. A 1990s large all over print Razor Ramon t-shirt. 1990s large all over print. I don't know what that means.
Large.
All over print. Razor Ramon t-shirt.
Oh, I thought the shirt was saying, like, the shirt is like Razor Ramon and it says, like, large all over. Like that. Or is
maybe?
It?
I'm taking it to mean, like, the print is all over. Like, it's a large, like, it's a size large. It's a size large and, like, it's all, like, the print is the entire shirt. It's not like a little logo in the middle. You know, that's how I'm interpreting it.
Yeah. Mine is there's a photo of Razor Ramon and the copy next to it is large all over. Like he's, but then that kind of sounds sexual too. You're saying he's large all over.
Yeah, potentially. Okay. One shirt I'm going to go with, but he also died, which I mean, does, sadly enough, that does up the value.
It does. I shouldn't laugh, but yes, he did die. Yeah.
I am going to go with $55.
Oh, that is a large bid. I'm going to take the under on this. I'm going to say it's like $40.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Let's see how we did. Vintage, and item number one, vintage 1990s WCW NWO folder wallet. I had a bid of $25. Andrew took the under. The actual retail price, $86.83.
No way. Who is walking around with an NWO billfold?
$86.83. Does it have any bids on it right now?
Oh,
or is
man.
Is that like the asking price? I can't tell. It doesn't really say. It's from the UK. It's shipping from the UK.
There There's you know. Like, can you imagine just like, you know, going to a bar and they're like, can I see your ID? And you pull out
an NWO wallet. It'd be great. It'd be fantastic. Okay. Item number two was a vintage WWF Attitude Era skateboard. Andrew, you bid $55.
Ugh,
I took the over. The actual retail price, $299.
Jeez. You only have to get one more. I got a sweep here.
It's a very good point. Okay, item number three. was the WWE T-shirt memorabilia lot. Carlito shirt, Mr. Kennedy shirt, Santino shirt, Roman Reigns wristbands and gloves, and Bray Wyatt swag. I bid $65. Andrew, you went with the over on this allotment of material. The actual retail price, $37.77.
Oh, I'm out?
You're out.
What is this, 0 for 4?
Yeah, I'm just very good at this game.
You're really good at this.
let's see, number four, the vintage WCW NWO Sting versus DDP thumb wrestling game. Yeah, you bid $18. I took the over. The actual retail price was $12.85, so it is a win for you there. And then the large all-over print Razor Ramon T-shirt, I bid $55. You took the under. The asking price on eBay for this T-shirt, Andrew, is $500.
I don't even know what to say.
Which is kind of ridiculous.
What would you do with a $500 shirt that is not even a dress shirt?
Makes no sense. Frame it? I don't even know.
I got it, but it's not like signed.
No. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I don't get it.
People, what are we doing here?
All right. One more. This is from Alex in Minneapolis, who's very upset because we went an hour and 45 minutes last week and didn't get to everybody's $5 challenges. So he says, we're doing this again because of Mike's laziness and pushing things another week and not fulfilling his empty promises. It reminds me of Simon Gotch once saying that Vince McMahon is the type of guy who buys a new fridge instead of hiring a repairman to fix his broken one. Andrew is excluded. No, you can't exclude Andrew from the challenge.
Why you gotta be like that?
Andrew's excluded from this challenge after his constant clowning of me and his half-point grifting. Now, I'm bringing you back in. Half-point for love. Also because Mike loves to flex all the shows he's intended live. It's only fair to test his knowledge.
Wow.
Okay. Okay. But, Andrew, I'm tagging you in on this one here. We're not just because of half-points. Come on.
Yeah.
Today's topic is Night of Champions 2012, which Mike was in the house for and almost threw hands with some drunk idiot. Yes, that is very true. I did. I got upgraded seats because of it. Okay, what was the – this is very Jose-ish. You did think Alex and Jose were the same people at one point, same person. What artist track was the theme for Night of Champions 2012? Andrew, I have no idea. Any guesses?
I mean, it would be a complete guess.
I remember the AC/DC song because it was an AC/DC song. This is probably some song that I've never heard of and don't remember.
Semi-Charmed Life.
Yeah, cool.
Third Eye Blind.
I like it. Third Eye Blind. Okay. Let's see. WWE announced that, along with Mike, there were actually 14,886 people in the building. What was the actual attendance for TD Garden that night? Do you know the answer to this question?
You would have, it's like a 1 in a 15,000 shot, unless you know.
Let's go with, I'm sure they papered it. So 12,511, Andrew. That's what I'm going to go with.
I think that's great. I wish he would have given you like, oh, you can be off by 100 or something, but this is odd. This is a tough one.
How many stars did Dave Meltzer give the WWE Championship main event of CM Punk versus John Cena? Not five.
Not five.
Because we've gone through that before. I don't know. Let's 4.5 sound good, Andrew?
Yeah, I would guess 4.5, yeah.
It was a good match. Oh, my God. What kind of question is this? How many pay-per-view buys did Night of Champions 2012 do? I mean, do we get a range or do we have to hit this right in the head?
I would guess they were doing in the 200 to 300s at that point. Okay.
211,000. How does that sound?
Love it.
Yes. Battle of Champions 2012 was presented by what 2012 film? I have no idea. 2012, Hangover Part 3. Was that out in 2012?
We keep guessing the Hangover, so one of these times it's gotta work.
You're right. All right. Hangover 3. I think that was on 2012. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. What is this? His answers is our screenshot, but it's all blurry. I can't even make out what these say.
Alex? Because he doesn't buy into the half-point system.
He's going to get mad about this next week. I'm going to do my best trying to figure out these answers. Okay, the theme for Night of Champions that year, we thought was Semi-Charmed Life by Third Eye Blind. It was not. Looks like it's Champions by Kevin Rudolph. Is that a guy?
I think he's a guy.
Okay. These are all blurry, so it's very hard to find, very hard to make out. Let's see. We guess the actual attendance is 12,511. It looks like it's 11,500.
Not by a thousand.
We guessed 4.5 stars in the main event. Looks like the correct answer is 4.25, so we were pretty close there. We were actually pretty close in the paper, you guys. We guessed 180. I'm sorry. We guessed 211,000. The correct answer was 189,000. So we were up by like 20 or 30 there, 25, whatever. It's pretty close. And then the movie was not brought to you by The Hangover Part 3, Andrew. It was brought to you by Dread 3D.
Oh, I forgot they rebooted that movie. I would not guess that.
All right. Well, that's a big old zero.
What? I feel there should have been a few half seeds in there.
I think, yeah, maybe 1.5. I think we need a range. Like, what's the actual attendance? Like you said, there's 20,000.
Who in the world would be like, oh, yeah, that's 12,118 or whatever it was?
Yeah, it's like, that's an impossible answer to get.
Ridiculous.
I don't think that qualifies as trivia. That's almost like it's almost like trolling. Like, I'm going to give you impossible
questions.
Guess
the number. Guess the number 1 between 15,000. Like that. That's what it is.
Yeah, and you get one guess. Wrong.
You're off by 1. Wrong.
Better chances of hitting a Mega Millions billion-dollar jackpot.
Shoot. Well, is it? Let's see. Is that it? That's it for those?
That's it. That's all we got. So I unless there's anything else you need to talk about, Andrew, that's it. I got nothing else. But
well,
there might be one more thing from you. I don't know.
There is one more thing. Shockingly, I got one more thing for you. These questions, however, completely fair. No tomfoolery to be found.
What about half points?
There is absolutely half points. There's even quarter points on this.
Whoa,
one.
Okay. Alex, cover your ears.
Yeah, Alex, you might want to tune out for this. In celebration, this is an odd theme, but we're going to go with it. Ninja Turtles has returned to the theaters. I don't know even if it did last weekend or if it's this weekend. I don't know, but we're going with it.
I think it's this weekend, but okay.
Is it this weekend? It looks kind of fun.
Yeah.
So tonight we're doing Ninja Turtles.
I like
as
it.
The theme. Question number one.
I'm curious how you rolled this back into wrestling, so this is good.
Surprisingly, there's some crossover. Question number one. Which former WWE wrestler played Super Shredder in 1991's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Secret of the Ooze?
Kevin Nash.
Very confident.
Extremely confident of that answer. I think that is a whole point, not even a half point.
Not even a quarter. You like screwed up the last name. Kevin Rash.
Kevin Gash.
In 1993, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, Jim Cornette wrestled a man in a Ninja Turtle suit. What did they call that wrestler?
What did they call the wrestler in the Ninja Turtle suit?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, but this could be fun.
Have you ever seen this clip, by the way?
No.
So anytime Jim Cornette, like, craps on wrestling, just think of this. Like, you know, modern-day wrestling silliness. Like, go watch this.
Okay. He wrestled a guy in a Ninja Turtle suit. What was the guy's name? What was it? Who was it? Or what did they call the?
What was the turtle's character's name?
Okay. I don't know. It's got to be something crazy like the Teenage Wrestling Turtle or something like that.
Want to go Teenage Wrestling Turtle?
Yeah.
Teenage Wrestling Turtle. All right. Which wrestler played a villain in 2016's Ninja Turtle Out of the Shadows? Which WWE wrestler?
Played a villain? Oh, I saw this movie too. I think it was Sheamus. Sheamus. Yeah, Sheamus. I don't remember if he played He played either Bebop or Rocksteady, I believe. I just don't remember which one.
So the original question, I was going to be mean and make you name that and go like, you know, I'll give you half and I'll give you half. But I'm going to be – I'll be generous and not ask that part of the question. We'll just go with that. Question number four. This is a treat, too. I didn't know this existed until yesterday. But in 1993, WWE had a one-time tag team composed of Dwayne Gill and Barry Hardy wearing Ninja Turtle outfits. What was the name of that team?
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah. It's nuts. They're dressed as Ninja Turtles.
I can't believe I've never seen this before.
Yeah, I stumbled on it on WrestleCrap yesterday.
Okay, they're going to be called, they can't call themselves the Ninja Turtles. That's probably like a trademark infringement. So, I keep going back to the same thing. It's got to be something like the Wrestling Turtles or something like that.
Wrestling Turtles. Question number five. You can get 0.25 on this. These are 0.25 answers because there's four of them.
Okay, cover your ears, Alex.
Alex, turn this off. In 2016, WWE released crossover action figures of wrestlers as Ninja Turtles. Which four wrestlers did they use as the Turtles?
In 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In 2016. It had to have been popular wrestlers. So I'm going to guess. Do I have to guess which turtle they were? Or
No, because then we'd probably have to go into 8 points.
Okay.
Well, yeah, we'll just go. But if you want to guess who they would be, then you can do that too.
I'm going to say, so 2016, I'm trying to think who would have been notable then. Let's go with. They were trying to get Roman Reigns over, and I think in 16 he was coming. They were still trying to get him over as a face, even though it wasn't working. So Roman Reigns would have been one of the Turtles.
Which one do you think he was? Just for fun.
I think, yeah, just for Roman Reigns strikes me as a Leonardo.
The leader. All right.
I think they would have gone with Cena as a turtle. And Cena probably would have been a Michelangelo.
Okay.
And then it gets a little harder, huh? Then Randy Orton as he's definitely a Raphael. Like
definitely
Raphael.
Yeah, definitely Raphael.
You know.
Yep.
But who would have been the Donatello Turtle in 2016? Kind of the smart guy. He's inventive. He's, you know, he's definitely intelligent and the most put together. That's a really hard one. Who would have been that fit in this top? He had to be a top guy. 2016, Donatello. You know what? I think 2016 was around the time. That John Moxley, well, Dean Ambrose was champion. So let's go with Dean Ambrose, even though it's not really a good Donatello fit, but I don't want to get too hung up in that. So
sure.
Let's go John Moxley again. Let's go Dean Ambrose.
All right.
I'm pretty sure he was the champion around that time.
Are these answers locked in?
Yeah. I think I'm happy with them. I picked a song. That's not what I was trying to do for a lockdown. I don't know what that was. I took my glasses off, and then I couldn't see anything, so it's my own issue. I almost played a commercial.
Oh.
All right. So now I'm locked in.
Are you trying to tell me I'm going to die someday? I'm never going to die. What have you heard?
Wow. That was dramatic.
It was.
And I am going to inform you that you did not get five, but you did get 2.25.
2.25. Okay. I'm very confident in the Kevin Nash answer and the Sheamus answer. So that means I think I got one of the turtle action figures correct.
That is correct. Yes.
Okay.
Kevin Nash was Super Shredder, 100%. Question two, who did Jim Cornette wrestle? You guessed Teenage Wrestling Turtle.
Yeah, not right.
It was very close. It was Cowabunga.
Oh, that would have made sense. Yeah. That would have made sense. I didn't even think to go with a catchphrase.
You are correct. It was Sheamus, and he was Rocksteady in Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. What was the name of the one-time-only tag team of the Ninja Turtles in WWE? You guessed the Wrestling Turtles. It was very close. It was the Toxic Turtles.
I knew it had been something like that, yeah. Again, it makes sense.
It's silly, too, because I don't remember the exact names, but they were like Jimmy and John or something. Like, they didn't even bother to do, like... You know, turtle time names. 2016, WWE released action figures, which with four wrestlers as the turtles. You guessed Roman Reigns, Cena, Orton, and Ambrose. The one that was correct was John Cena. It was, however, Leonardo. John Cena was Leonardo.
I mean, that does make some sense, I guess.
And then the rest of these three are pretty shocking. Raphael was Sting.
What? Okay.
Michelangelo was Randy Savage. And Donatello was The Undertaker.
None of that makes any sense.
No. I think Cena does, like Cena the Leader.
Yeah. Yeah.
But... Sting maybe is Raphael. He's like a bit of an outsider, kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know. Savage, I guess he's kind of a party guy, but I wouldn't have assumed they'd grab somebody from the 80s. And Donatello's Undertaker, that one doesn't work at all for me.
Oh, not really. All right, well, I'll tell you. I mean, it's one of the better weeks I've had, to be honest with you.
It's pretty good, yeah. I'm just kind of like scrolling through some things, and 2.25 is not bad at all. So I would feel good about that.
Andrew, where else can people find you?
You can find me on the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast. We are currently working on a couple of new episodes for the summer and fall. But catch up, have fun on the other 50-some episodes. That is the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast.
You can find me on Twitter at TorturingMan. Email the show, allelitaftershow@gmail.com. Call the show next week if you want to, 515-605-9345. Do it on a Monday night when we record, 9 p.m. Eastern, and you can get on the show just like DJ in Miami did earlier tonight and multiple people did last week. So give us a call or email us for next week. Other than that, Andrew, I think we should tell the people to enjoy their wrestling for this week, and we will talk to them a week from now.
Yeah.
And if I could find the outro music, I'd play it. That's how I was going to close. Now I've got it. Okay. So now we will tell them to enjoy the rest of their wrestling for the week, and we'll talk to them later. How does that sound?
Enjoy your week, everyone.